Okay, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very proud to be here with you, tell you a little bit about what I'm thinking. That's basically the context, context of my speech. Just to introduce me briefly, so I'm working for IBM, as you heard already. I'm working for IBM in the traditional mainframe business, and I can't, you see, you will see that heritage also during my speech. Anyway, you see, I'm basically employed in IBM to do things which are good for IBM and the industry, which are not normally in the IBM plan. So that's basically my trademark, and that's my job with IBM. So what I did there was we basically got the mainframes put on CMOS, and we got Linux put on the mainframe. That was the major things. And most recently, I said, after we have this great development community around Linux, we need a business community which is possibly as great embracing Linux-based solution stacks in the business. And that's why we created this Linux Solution Group with friends and others. And I will talk about all of this a little bit. And I gave my pitch. So now we have to, I gave my pitch the name. Do we have this? No? Next page. And here the name of my pitch is Linux Power Everywhere. And the title is Agenda. Number one, Linux is powerful. And number two, Linux is everywhere. We have in IBM this new cool hardware platform called IBM Power Everywhere, which is nicely supported by Linux. And when I look at this whole development environment, I have this Linux development, open source culture, as I already said, and we would like to go into the, to describe what we did to create this community which drives to stimulate business with Linux-based solutions. So that's basically the theme and that's the agenda. I call it Linux Power Everywhere. I have to apologize. I have charts in German and charts in English. I'm just learned I talk in English. So I also, when you need for the backup of this conference, all my charts in English, I also have them somewhere distributed in English so I can compile you a set of English charts. But for the time being, I think it should be good enough if I simply talk in English. Okay. So what means powerful? And as I said, I'm over 40 years with the mainframe. I would simply say the mainframe is powerful. Why is the mainframe powerful? For two simple reasons. It has a very rigid platform architecture. Has been created right from the beginning, this rigid platform architecture, with the objective of addressing all kinds of needs in the industry, which led to the point that we had seven different hardware implementation and 13 different software implementations to the same architecture. And when you create an architecture which can stand that, it obviously can survive, as we have seen, 40 years and more. For that very simple reason, because it's strict enough to deal with multiple purposes. Now, the next thing, what means powerful, it has a broad customer acceptance because it's always had, because it's a good basis for technical integration of solution, and it's a good basis for business innovation. So if we take this, I just put it up as a statement because I'm saying Linux is as powerful as the mainframe for very simple reasons we experience. When we did put Linux on the mainframe, we basically found out that it has a very rigid architectural structure which is hardware agnostic, I would say. And I have described it on this little picture here. You see, it has those black lines in the compiler, in the utilities, and in the kernel, which are architecture lines, so that hardware-dependent stuff is always put on the other side of the line. And interestingly enough, so that's one prerequisite for rigid architecture, and the other one is the red stuff better be not too much. And here you see how much it was when we put Linux from Intel to the mainframe. So in the upper three lines, it was less than 1%, and in the kernel, it was less than 3%, and we had the whole thing running, and then we found out this mainframe has a couple of functionalities we would like to support, so we added another 8% in the kernel over the last 4 years. For me, this is a clear description. Linux has a rigid architecture, which we better don't disturb, and which for me is the best prerequisite, if I draw that conclusion, to survive for the next 40 years, and at least. And it's a good business thing. So if I look at Linux servers, it's a Gartner approach. Yeah, Linux is approaching somewhat $2 billion of revenue by quarter, and it grows five times as fast as the Windows market and eight times as fast as the server market. So basically, Linux has broad acceptance, and it's growing, and it's being accepted. So why shouldn't it fulfill all the prerequisites which I say the mainframe fulfills when I says it stays forever young? This will stay forever young. And now my next statement, it is everywhere. You possibly all know that. Yeah. When we have, this is an old chart which I had up for 5 years ago or so. I said we have this Intel-based Linux kernel, and we have to do two things to make it kind of enterprise systems kernel ready for the mainframe. We do things like scalability, clustering, and systems management into it, and to make it applicable for the embedded space where we had in the original days, everybody has its own operating system because the hardware resources weren't big enough to go with a kind of industry standard operating system. We have to cut it down on size. We have to get real-time behavior into it, specific device drivers for this embedded environment. And this all was done. So we had this micro C Linux kernel, which was derived from kernel 2.0, is now integrated in kernel 2.6. So when I look at kernel 2.6, Linux is everywhere, from the largest mainframe to the smallest little device, which possibly will become this $100 laptop on an AMD processor. So I have put this whole thing up a little bit. So you have this Dreambox, which is an IBM Power PC based. Google runs Linux in its Intel cluster. And then there is this wireless router, which has a MIPS CPU, and the Motorola cell phone, which has an ARM CPU. So just a little, and you know it's on many more places, but this is a good perspective to say Linux is everywhere. And with that, I think I could simply add also Linux is reliable and it's being trusted. And you can see that IBM runs their silicon manufacturing site in East Fishkill, also controlled by Linux. I don't have it on the chart here, but I think that's a pretty good example. Now, I'm saying when I'm talking about power everywhere, we have this hardware event, this hardware initiative, so that we are saying we want to open up the power architecture to hardware builders in the world so that they can create hardware and specific hardware around this power platform. And whatever they do there, I think we're clearly looking at Linux being the supporting operating system. And the most interesting part, which has been talked quite a bit about in the press, was this Cell BE processor. BE stands for Broadband Engine. And that is this processor which we have developed in IBM together with Sony and Toshiba. Most of those it contains, just to show it here, in the left-hand corner, it's an industry standard power architecture processor. And it has an L2 in the upper left corner. And those little SPEs you see there, which are synergistic processor elements, they are really built to do streaming processing. They do very bad branching, and they don't have a cache. They simply have a locally attached memory, and they are really optimized for streaming processing, which, and I will talk a little bit where that stuff is needed and good. And in the middle, you see a 256 megabit per second bus, which kind of is the connection between all those elements. So that's a very powerful and innovative piece of hardware. We in Böbling have done most of those SPEs, and my colleague who has a technical responsibility for it, he has his wife has studied biology, and she made up this chart. You see, when we looked at why is such a kind of processor good for the future, I would say simply because it exploits parallelism, and it isn't just a runner for the next faster processor, and it better not be that, because whatever gets faster and too fast will burn pretty soon. That's basically what the technology is. And if you look at our brain, it doesn't burn, it doesn't get in most cases even too hot, and this is because it's very slow. And what does it do? It does very many associations in parallel, millions and billions of parallel associative elements in there. And we start not with millions and billions, we simply start with eight here and see what it means to the structure of the, I would say, I'm seeing this as a first step into a totally, completely different direction, how we will build systems and computers in the future. Now, and the interesting thing about this, well, I'm telling it here, how do we support it? We support it with Linux. Yeah, we had this, we have basically taken the PowerPC 64 kernel, and now we needed to add CellBE architecture support to it, and we needed management support to it for those SPEs, yeah? And we basically used and slightly modified the file system logic in the kernel to do this job. So we have a CellBE library support right now available. We have an SPE compiler with a tool chain, and we have a distribution, all of this through a partner of ours who I'm talking, who has an initial distribution available so that the community can do something with this. And we have the CellBE kernel kit with development kit 1.0, which is the first one, and there will be a second one which will be much better. So it has documentation, a simulator, and an XLC compiler. What we don't have yet is we don't have too much hardware of it. We have, you see, the Intel, excuse me, Sony will come out with their PlayStation 3, where this whole thing is built for, in November this year, as they have announced. And I think that's when we have mass hardware with this stuff. And we in IBM have built a little blade with two of those processors are in, which you can plug into a blade center so that we can run that hardware. And I think we will have in Böbling pretty soon a little system model of 8 or 10 of those blades that folks who have ideas, I want to implement something on this crazy stuff, can test out what the hell does it do. So that's and I'm just explaining this, you see. I'm not, it looks like I don't know what you can all do with this BE processor and what it's really. There's a Fraunhofer Institute and there are universities also. I'm coming to this chart here which says where is the damn thing good. It's obviously good for home computer entertainment, at least Sony thinks it is. It's possibly good for medical imaging and radar imaging. There was one proposal when you do a CAT scan of a patient right now. It takes 1 or 2 days until you have the results, and when the thing wasn't too good, the CAT scan, you get the patient back in and do it a second time. Now, this chip would enable you to do the online analysis of such a CAT scan while the patient is still lying there. So if the result isn't any good, you can do the second shot right away without sending him back and forth. Just to give you an idea. It's good for simulation environments. It's for high-performance computing. It seems to be good, but you have to adjust your algorithms, your libraries to do this. Basically, the whole idea is you write crazy libraries for those SPEs, and then you write programs which are using those libraries. That's the way it is right now. There will be compilers at some point in time, but I wouldn't want to exploit on this here. So video surveillance, online gaming, digital media content, and all that kind of stuff is possibly interesting. And so there's quite a little bit of hype, and I think we are glad that we have it on Linux. And I go once back here. You see, the most important thing is, I think 2 weeks ago or so, this CellBE support has been accepted by the community and integrated into the mainstream Linux version 2.6.16 on the 20th of March. And so that is there. That's in the normal mainstream distribution if somebody wants to do this. So that's basically what I'm saying. Linux is everywhere, and Linux is also there where some people might not have supposed it would be. I have to state one point. When I, 4 or 5 years ago, when I put Linux on the mainframe, I had a customer who was very much into working with OS2, and IBM was withdrawing from OS2. So he said, "What the hell shall I do? You are withdrawing from OS2. And he said, "Okay." I said, "Put your stuff on Linux. Because when you put it on Linux, it runs, you had Intel hardware, it runs on the hardware which have you today, it even runs on the mainframe, and it basically runs on each and every hardware which come along and hasn't been developed yet." And this is what I said 4 or 5 years ago, and I think I was right with it. This man, this was a bigger financial company here in Germany, they asked one of our vice presidents, yeah, he was in charge of the mainframes, and he asked him, "You have told us years ago we should rely on OS2, and now you are telling me we should rely on Linux. Why are you doing this? Why should I trust you?" And this vice president said, "Yeah, with OS2 we wanted to set an industry trend, and with Linux we simply want to follow an industry trend." I think this was pretty nice to hear from a proprietary, I would say from one of the heads of a formerly proprietary-oriented company. Anyway, so with that as a background and with that in mind for the future, for the great future of Linux, I just want to put this one chart up to summarize for you what you all know. So what are the real characteristics of this open source Linux development community? You can tell me later on when I'm wrong, but I want to basically put it in two cases. We right now have in Böbling in our lab approximately 100 people working in this Linux development community. And I would say, number one, you see, normal development plans in cathedral companies are driven by schedules, and you better adhere to those schedules. And when there is a day that you kind of put your code complete, you have your code complete, you put it together, you create your model of the total system release, and you start system tests. That's the way it works. Now, those guys working in the open source community, once such a date appears, they tell me, "Yeah, I can't release my code yet into the open source because it isn't in a state yet that I can be proud of it." Think about that. Who, you see, decides that his code should be in a state to be proud of? In normal companies, you never don't get it. It needs a community like this. So I think you understand that. And the second thing is, you see, when you do a new project, when you want to get an innovation created, In those casino companies, what do you need first? A business case. How do you do a business case? You get your best technical people to assess what the hell does it cost to do this new stuff. And then you get business people around and says, can I sell that stuff? And you have your best business people and your best technical people working and discussing for half a year. And if you are lucky, then you have an agreed upon business case and then you do it. Now, analysis says that 70% of all projects which are started this way will cost, when they are not discontinued, they will cost approximately 50% and more additional resources compared to the first estimates at the original business case. So I'm saying that's a typical culture and typical management structure where you waste 6 months of your best people to make a decision on irrelevant numbers. In this open source community, Zamba is an example, Linux is, I think it is this way. You want to do something new. You find some people who are interested in and have the same opinion. This should be good. And then you find people who would like to use this stuff. And they and come just together. You decide this is good. This will be a success. You try a prototype. And after 6 months, you have some prototype working, and if it becomes evident after the 6 months that it's worthwhile to continue to work on it, you continue to work on it, and you will drive it to success. So that's my two typical characteristic differences between this cathedral culture and the open bazaar culture in the open source in our area, I should say, because I already tell you, in the German lab, we have at least 100 people who are working according to this culture in this area. And so my net is, the development culture is the right culture which creates freedom for innovation. And that's what we need for the future. We need innovation. So now, but how does the business culture look like? So the open source, I just summarized in this first paragraph, yeah, we have this right development culture, which is very effective, very result-oriented, and very engaged. And now we, the only thing I think we have to continue to be successful, not to manage it to death by overloading it, and when I talk about Linux. But that's another theme and another question to be talked about. Now, in the business-oriented culture, you basically have many people who say, I don't mind how my programs and how my IT stuff runs. The main thing is I know whom to sue when it doesn't run. And this is a contrary to, let's say, happy acceptance of results, of technical results from the open source community. And I think together with companies, with this, so we have to get to people together. That's basically what we said we want to do with this Linux Solution Group. We want to get people together who believe basically in the success of open and partially proprietary stacks on Linux, and say we think that is important and that will drive the business importantly ahead. And those believers, they always have offenders, and to keep the offenders off their shoulders, they very often find it's pretty good if we have partners who think like us. And what do you do in Germany? You create an association of birds of the feather, and that's what the Linux Solution Group is. And now I'm describing you a little bit what we are and what we want to do and what we are doing already. So we are a community which have leading IT companies and their business partner, small and medium business companies specifically, and or people who are working in the open IT scenarios like SUSE, Red Hat, and others. And we have regional and local governments in this association, and our focus is on the German-speaking areas, speak Germany, Swiss, and Austria. And the whole idea is those people we want to address, and that's one of the reasons why my chants are in German. We want to talk with each other, and I think it's those people are not necessarily intrigued to be very fluently in foreign languages, so we talk with German in this arena, and I think that's important. Now, the technology which gets created, so this is international technology anyway, but for simple communication reasons, we restrict ourselves on to the German-speaking environment. And what do we want to do? We want to create trust in industry and administrations. We want to have networking with each other, exchange best practices, and clearly exploit this hardware resiliency of Linux so that we say wherever something runs, we can run it on each and every hardware. So that's basically our intent. And we want to clearly increase the success of total solution stacks, business-oriented. So I call this a business-oriented integration culture of open source components. And that's basically our intent and our objective. And how we are doing this? So that's first of all, first part of it was networking. And that's the crowd of networks I have basically put up there. That's an extract of companies which are networking. So I think it's a nice picture. Coming to the next point, we have, what do we call this, an administrative office, which we or a central office, I would say, in Stuttgart, which is supported, which is run by a society, by an institution which is supported by the local government in Baden-Württemberg. And so we have a, so this same MFG is the name of this. They have another IT network which is called BWCOM and has some 40,000 members, and they are doing kind of interesting things. The MFG means media and film company. So there's even it's an interesting institution. So we find there, you see, that was an institution where I could find people which I could have IBM lawyers talking to, which I needed to have to talk to somebody when I wanted to help create this Linux solution group. It's very important that you have something like this in your background. So we have our members, which are IT companies, customers, IT vendors, towns and communities, universities. Oh, this is the crowd of our members. And such an association is basically what it does. And so we have this main office, and in the main office we have an administrative part, we have a project part, and we have a technical part of work, and then we have this, we have an architecture board which kind of directs the architectural work, and we have we call it a board of directors which kind of directs the whole thing and finally decides what gets done. But it, really what gets done must be driven by the members. Now I give you a brief update on what we are doing. On the right-hand side, you see that we want to address scenarios and solution stakes which are available in the industry. We want to address them, we want to describe them, we want to address variances of those solution stacks, and we will then also find recommendations how to improve those solution stacks and stuff. And the idea is each of those solution stacks has a mentor from our members who, one or more, and in most cases more than one member, who are driving the technical work and who almost are, and who are really doing the detail of the technical work. And the things which we have there is the first thing is a thin client, which we are doing with the town of Schwäbisch Hall. It's running and it's pretty much to completion. Then we have the scenarios groupware, desktop management, systems management, and infrastructure services. So that's one part. And out of that, and out of looking at that, comes this next thing which I called cooperation. You can also say these are bounties or so. This is one of the ones where we worked together with CERNET, was those Zamba 4 wins. The idea behind these corporations is you have something which we, which our members and other people in the industry might decide that this is a good stuff to have, and we have somebody who has a skill and the ability to implement it, and if you get a few people together who say we all put our money together to pay the people who have the skill to do it, we might even get it done and have it for all of us. And this Zamba Wins 4 was such a thing, and we thought this was a very good example, and we are eager to go for more, to implement more of those examples. And we had a session of our board of directors where we kind of decided we want to possibly work out a process which addresses this whole subject more formally so that we can do this in a broader fashion than just through this one occasional event. Now, and then we have open competitive, we have a kind of task forces or work groups. One was on open competitive bidding. This was a work group where we said specifically in the governmental arena, so make sure that whoever puts up, let's say, a call for some work to be done, a request, so that the requests to get work done are formulated in a way that open source stuff can be bid to it. Some of those governmental kind of work offers are implicitly implying you have Microsoft or so it's really interesting. So that was an interesting thing. We had recently another workforce which was got a lot of excitement, which says we want to address this question of open IT. And they came up and we want to really do big follow-on works there. One of the requests was, can we even possibly find a new name for open IT and get it legally protected, so that we say open, what is this? I don't know. And so there was a big excitement also from our technical project leader on this, and we will see what we can do with that. And then our members and their products, so we will have an interchange best practices, and we will talk about technical things which we think are leading edge, so we will have small conferences, not such a big one like this, but on specific themes we will be supporting and encouraging. So that's basically the kind of work we are doing. And looking at our members, we started approximately a year ago with 29 members. This chart says we are now 48 members, but that's not true. We are, meanwhile, 50 members, but I didn't correct the chart yet. So there is a nice growth of members, which are, as I said, 24 IT companies, 12 IT users, 6 academic partners, 3 towns, and we have a little subsidiary in Switzerland, which has 6 members, and we are about to create a subsidiary in Austria in the next month or two. So I think we are very pleased with how this whole concept is growing, and also how our members are actively taking a part in this activity. So this is basically our board of, what is this? This board of directors, who sounds very high, the scale for an association like this. So we have, see, it was interesting because I was basically the driver to get it created. Some people said, why don't we have, and in those days we had Richard Seibt, who is now, let's say, because he left SUSE Novell, he is now just a consultant of our board of directors. But the whole idea was, because I was from IBM, pretty much the motor of getting this done, we said it would be a nice idea to have possibly somebody else like Richard Seibt being the chairman of the board of directors. But then we had an interesting, nice discussion between Rettet and Novell and me, and said, you see, when this would look like a little bit semi-sided into the direction of Novell, and I was considered to be neutral to both of them, so that's the way I became chairman. And it is a fun job, I like it. So we have Eugen Binder, he is Stuttgarter Lebensversicherung. He basically has his whole company on Linux client and works also towards a thin client environment. He has a very interesting experience. Then we have Skynamics, Heiko Erhardt, Volker Smit from Novell, Niels Mache, that's a company in Stuttgart, Struktur AG. And when we had Switzerland joining, the Swiss government was also joining, but they wanted to, if you get the Swiss government joining, you offer them a place in your board of directors. And that's what we did, and they accepted. And I think that's nice. It's interesting to have a person from a Swiss government in a company like that, in a group like that. Okay. Now this is basically our contact points. And so we have this main office in Stuttgart. The main point is you look at www.lisoc.org when you want to understand a little bit more what we are and who we are. And we have there Oliver Zils. He is the administrative head. And we have recently hired Nico Golden as a technical project leader. He has been Berufsakademie, Berufsakademie, I'm missing the word of, he has basically done his Berufsakademie with IBM, has done his exam, and he is now working for us since half a year, and he excites me. He is a very young guy. He was always working with Linux and open source in IBM, doing this Berufsakademie education. They always did anything on Intel, on Windows, and he always said, can I do this also on Linux? And so he made his kind of time, 3 years in the Berufsakademie, a little bit more tedious, and I think it's a great guy. You should meet him. We have our branch office in Switzerland, and we are creating one in Austria. And last not least, we will be very actively present on the Linux stack in Wiesbaden this year. Let me tell you a little bit about my opinion about the Linux stack. For me, the Linux stack in Germany is more an event where the technical community meets and where they share experiences about technical works they are doing. See, just to, in contrary, for instance, to the Linux world, where you have to have big showcases it's intended more to be focused on getting people buying stuff. That's not really working that good. So I'm thinking this is a very good thing here to support the Linux stuff. IBM typically never was on the Linux stuff because they said this is not where the people run around who buy from us. And if we go to an event, we want to go to an event where we can buy, where we can sell stuff. And I said I had in the German lab, I already told you, I have more than 100 Linux worker people, implementers there, and they love to go to the Linux stack. And I said, putting that much emphasis on Linux, we feel to be a kind of second-grade company, not being available, not being there. So last year I pushed them there, and now even others pulled us there, so I think that's a good progress. And we will also have a pedestal for the Linux Solution Group on this IBM stand. And so we will have on the first day of the Linux stack an evening event, which we call Lizok at Night. So I think whoever will be there, I will be there at the stand, join us there. I think most of you are participants, you are invited. And the technical project leader, Nico Gulden, will have a speech on the second day, on Thursday, about the Lizok group, where he basically explains in a little bit more detail the second part of my presentation I gave to you here, and guides you through what we are doing there in more detail. And I will do a presentation on Friday, which is more a little bit IBM oriented, where I take the first part of my pitch and elaborate a little bit more on detail what are we doing with this cell stuff and what can somebody do with this cell stuff. So that's basically the next event ahead of us. Yeah, and I'm very pleased that I could talk to you about this. And if you have any questions, any recommendations, you see, take the opportunity, become a member of the Lizok whenever you think it's good for you. When you don't think it's good for you, talk to me why you don't think it's good for me. Maybe we can do something better. So thank you very much.